Like every large fraternity, amateur radio has its heroes, legends, and villains. If you look for a person in the ham or amateur radio community who qualifies for all three categories, you'll come up with Donald Alan Miller. Whiskey 9, Whiskey November Victor. He's one of the pioneers of de-expeditioning. He was highly praised for going into rare places, or even places where nobody else had been before. A high flight was eventually to be followed by a deep fall, however, when Don was accused of having faked some of his DX operations. He struggled hard to gain his reputation, but then became involved in a family tragedy that led to his confinement for the past two decades. A free man again, Don is now about to reschedule his private and professional life, and as a radio amateur as well. He now holds the call sign Alpha Echo 6 India Yankee. His is certainly a very unusual biography. For the first time, after almost 25 years, Don Miller told his story to Wolf Harant, Oscar Echo 1, Whiskey Hotel Charlie, the curator of the Vienna-based International Foundation QSL Collection, a research and documentation center for the history of radio communications.
I was born in 1936 in Chicago, Illinois, and I became interested in amateur radio while I was in high school and as a young teenager in Chicago. I was intrigued, not so much by the electronic end of things, but what intrigued me the most, because I was studying politics and always enjoyed geography and world affairs, was the fact that it seemed to be a very open means of communication.
So Don, still in high school, passed his novice and general exams in 1952 at the age of 16 and became W9WNV.
Around 1955, 1956, I became very active on the high frequency bands, 10, 15, and 20 meters primarily, and enjoyed working DX country after country, mostly on CW, but a little bit on AM. Then the expeditioners were W0MLY, we called him Womley, and Gus Browning, W4BPW, and Danny Weil had been active through the ASME expedition. Dick Spensley, the KV4AA, was the one running that, and ACK, W4ECI in Alabama, was sponsoring the Gus Browning expedition at the time, and Womley was parading all over Africa, so there was plenty of expeditions going on, I mean the good old-fashioned kind. I had no plans to, but I was always interested in traveling. However, I finished high school and entered college to become what we call pre-medical studies at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore. I went through pre-medical there, and between approximately 1957 and 1961, I completed medical school back in Chicago and became an MD, a medical doctor. But when I finished medical school and finished my internship around 1960 to 1961, I decided to enlist in the military rather than to be drafted, which might interrupt my medical career. I decided to do that time and get it served first.
Don went to Korea, was stationed at the Osan Air Force Base as a medical doctor and flight sergeant. Captain Don Miller obtained a new call sign, Hotel Lima 9, Kilo Hotel.
Korea was not a particularly rare country, but I was amazed at how many thousands of amateurs apparently had not had any contact with any HL9. They had told me one after another that it was a new country for them. At the time, there were many, many thousands of amateurs throughout the world in all the countries who were running 25 watts or 50 watts with just a dipole, for example. So during my year to year and a half there, I was very active on all of the bands. And then had the idea that there were some countries in that area and some places which qualified as countries under DXCC, which hadn't been activated. So with the help of some friends, I explored the possibility of using my military leave time to go to a couple of such places, and that's what happened. One was Rota, which was in the Marianas, Parisi Vila was another one. So we did those two expeditions.
The DXCC, or DX Century Club, is an award program managed by the ARRL, the American Radio Relay League, where radio amateurs try to work and confirm contacts with as many countries, or rather geographical entities, as possible.
It was just a wonderful experience, and I enjoyed the mechanics of organizing something, especially when there's only one operator, only one ham. Of course, you need some help, but trying to organize an efficient operation where one person can basically satisfy the desire of most of the hams who are seeking the new country or the place where you're going, and trying to do it on all the different bands within a period of time to keep your equipment running, to have backup equipment, your power, your fuel, your transportation is quite an operation for one person when you're in a more or less remote part of the world.
During his time in Korea, Don talked frequently with fellow ham operator Charles Chuck Swain, Kilo 7 Lima Mike Uniform, who worked for the CIA in Laos and was also interested in going on de-expeditions. Don completed his military training back in the United States and returned briefly to Southeast Asia, also working for the CIA.
And during my 6 months in Laos, the two of us planned that we would spend a couple of years traveling to as many rare and scarce places or new countries for DXCC purposes as we could. Chuck had some connections to help us get into some of the countries in Southeast Asia, such as Burma, which was very difficult to travel to at the time, Vietnam, which had not had any amateur radio activity, Thailand, Cambodia. Cambodia was extremely rare. With his connections, we were able to maneuver some licenses and to get our equipment into some of those countries. And eventually, ACK, W4ECI, who had sponsored Gus Browning's expeditions, gave us some backing. So we were able to operate from a number of rare and new places from Southeast Asia over the period of, I would say, 4 to 6 months. This was around 1965, 1966. Many of the people in government didn't even know what ham radio was, but if any licensed authority would give you a rubber stamp or a written permission, that was good enough for ARRL and DXCC at the time. But it was quite dangerous. That was the other part of aspect of it. It was quite dangerous because especially Americans were being arrested and detained, and we were detained several times. Once in a while, there was a payoff involved, or we had to leave equipment somewhere and just leave it there. And it was touch and go, but it was probably the most satisfying part of the whole 3 years of de-expeditioning to have pulled off those operations.
Later on, the two were joined by Ted Thorpe, Zulu Lima 2 Alpha Whiskey Juliet. He was a radio announcer from Wellington, New Zealand, and they went all across the Pacific to British Samoa, the Tongas, the New Hebrides, New Ireland, etc. And that's when they became aware that the previous operations by some of their heroes had, in fact, not been strictly legitimate.
On many of these islands, when we would land, Danny Weil had been to a number of them. And the people were kind of perplexed why we would want to land all of our gear on these islands and operate. On two or three different locations, we were told, well, why don't you just operate from your boat like this last fellow did? Well, at first I had trouble understanding what they were trying to tell me, but apparently Danny went to all of the places, or most of the places that he said he was at, but it became apparent that he didn't actually land his equipment on the island. He would operate from his boat, which was a lot easier, especially if you're alone.
Though the Marinero was a rather small boat, and though they had to travel on a very reduced budget, the three of them carried on remarkably well until 28th of January 1966, when disaster struck.
We last saw each other in Pango Pango. Our funds were running low, and I was scheduled to return to visit some amateur radio clubs in the United States and in South America to raise a little money so that we could continue. And I took off, and they were in Pango Pango and waiting for the weather to clear to go to a place called Wallace Island, which was an isolated French territory in the Pacific, which was a separate, very rare country. And while I was gone, they took off for the island. And during my tour, I think I was in Caracas, Venezuela, somewhere in South America at the time, I had received word that the Wallace Island operation was a success, but that they had not returned to Pango Pango. There had been a severe tropical hurricane, and the ship had not shown up in port. We contacted Wallace Island by wireless, and they had confirmed that they had departed there, so we knew we were in trouble. And I aborted my speaking tour and flew back to Pango Pango in Samoa, and it was not a pretty sight. The island was devastated by one of the most severe hurricanes they had ever experienced. So New Zealand cooperated, and at our request, they sent a seaplane and a team, a search and rescue team, to search for our missing boat. At the same time, I was able to get cooperation from some of my Air Force friends at Hickam Air Force Base in Hawaii, which also sent a second search plane.
The search was in vain, and after 2 weeks had to be abandoned. Don, being deeply shocked, was about to cancel the rest of the planned operations, but then decided to carry on and finish the job in memory of his dead friends. And for the next year and a half, he went to a number of destinations, particularly in East Africa, the Indian Ocean, and the Caribbean. But luck obviously turned against him when a controversy occurred with the folks back home.
The controversy occurred, and it was mostly my fault, from two things that happened that I regret very much. And I think I owe an apology to the DX fraternity on a couple of issues. First of all, when I used to listen to Gus Browning going around on his expedition, I used to hear the same high-powered DXers work him night after night, sometimes more than once each night or day, same band. And I vowed that I tried to limit contacts to, you know, I tried to set some operating standards during my expedition, especially on CW, but on both modes. And I tried to limit, and I made it known, that one contact per mode, per band, per station, to give everybody a chance, especially when there's only one of you and your hours are limited. Not everybody observed that. Not everybody was respectful. And I made a list, not a written list, but a mental list of some of these people that were seemed to be abusing the DX, and I wouldn't work them. And as I went along in the expedition, I got, unfortunately, more and more arrogant and more impulsive, and I added people to my mental checklist that I wouldn't work, and I think that was wrong. This infuriated a lot of people, and some of them were in the same DX club in the W-2 area. They became enraged, and I can understand that because they're, you know, the DX competition is highly spirited, and at the time I didn't really realize the impact of what I was doing, but I was determined, and I went on and I did that, and I regret it. The second thing that happened was that when I got down to the South American area and I obtained a license to operate at St. Peter and Paul's Rocks from the Brazilian government, a very valid license, and a friend of mine joined me from New England, a fellow named Herb Klein, K1IMP. He joined me in South America, and we were attempting to charter a boat. We had the funds, we had the license to go to St. Peter and Paul's Rocks. I believe we could have landed there in favorable weather. And one of the reasons we wanted to go there, not only was it a rare country, but some time before that, a German de-expeditioner purportedly went there and worked only 30 hams, almost all of them from the same DX club in the W-2 area, the same club that I mentioned earlier. And I knew the operation was entirely phony because, first of all, the license from the Brazilian government was not to operate on the island. They were had permission only to go to that area, and the ARRL knew that, and that came to light later with verification from the ship captain that they did not, in fact, even land on the rocks. But because of the influence that this DX club had with the ARRL at the time, the ARRL counted these contacts anyway. And when we were just totally unable to get any ship to take us to that area, it was a very dangerous landing, I made the unfortunate decision that we would fake the operation. And I tried to justify this on the basis that, well, if the league is going to count an operation that wasn't licensed and wasn't there, that worked only 20 or 30 hams, they certainly should recognize an operation that is properly licensed, whether it's there or not, that works everybody. So Herb and I went to some rocks off the coast of South America and operated as that station.
Don also thought at that time, why shouldn't he follow a practice that even Gus Browning had pursued with a number of illegitimate operations? But the whole thing backfired. Don was accused of having faked not only this one, but also the majority of his other operations. What followed was a long and bitterly fought battle that almost split the ham fraternity.
After the whole thing was over with, the net result was that 6 of the 57 operations were disallowed, and some of them should have been disallowed, okay? I've never discussed a couple of them. There was one island that was disallowed in the Pacific, which was perfectly legitimate, where we were on dry land briefly, and I believe it was one of the reefs that the later disallowed. But however, the league was perfectly correct in disallowing a couple of others. Maria Teresa was not a valid operation, and one of the others out there wasn't, and there was a third that was questioned in the Pacific that I think was a valid disqualification. Now, there were 3 operations which were disallowed, which I'm still upset enough about that I'm going to ask, after I make my apologies to the DX fraternity, I'm going to ask the league to reconsider and possibly reinstate them. The first one is Devassa Island. We were there. There's no question in anybody's mind that we were there and that we had a license to be there. They also disqualified, and I was really shocked to hear this, our operation from Heard Island down in the Antarctic area, which is an Australian territory. When I had heard there was a controversy about that, I sent the league a copy of my Australian license, and I sent them a letter from the captain of the ship verifying that we had been there. It was uncalled for that operation to be disqualified. And the third place where I was a place called the Laccadive Islands in the Indian Ocean. My point is that if they disqualified those, they should have disqualified the illegitimate operations that the league knew were illegitimate.
As a consequence of all these troubles, Don decided to quit de-expeditioning and to go on with his medical career.
Marriage and family life were something that were new to me. So then the tragedy developed in my life. It ended with me going to prison for 20 years for a crime which hopefully still will be, the conviction still will be overturned by the courts. It's being considered at the moment. But I served 20 years in prison for the crime, a crime in which nobody was physically harmed, but in which it was said that I wanted to. And I don't want to get into too many details because it involved my former wife, who, by the way, is just fine. She's remarried. It involved a religious cult in which my son was being involved, my young son at the time, and a lot of emotions. But no physical harm came to anybody. It was something that was brought about by my own fault due to the same impulsiveness and the same traits that I had that got me into a lot of controversy when I was doing my expeditions. So although I didn't commit the crime, I think much of what happened to me was my own fault.
During the time he was in prison, Don Miller obtained his law degree and virtually fought himself out of jail. He's now living in California, starting a new life, and keeping on with a hobby that still has meant a lot for him in all those dark years, amateur radio. Don't say they never come back. Don, at least, has great plans for the future.
There is one country, one brand spanking new country. It's been completely overlooked now for some time, and I'm very eager to go there. Not modern de-expedition style with helicopters and military vessels and hundreds of thousands of dollars and teams of people, but just on a small boat with a few people and do it the old-fashioned way and have some fun.